Our guest in the studio today is Rupert Evershed, who writes for the Harts Advertiser once a month, a column which is called Nature Notes. And we picked up on this, and not only do we want to talk to him today, which we are going to shortly, but also we're going to get him to record his notes for us each month so that we can include them in our programmes. Rupert, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're not, in fact, as I had assumed you are, a natural history person. You're not trained as a nature person.
No, it's always been a hobby since being a child. I've never had any official training as such, apart from perhaps an A-level in biology. But again, I always viewed that as a hobby. So it's just been sprung out of really enjoying being outside and walking, and far back as I can remember, really.
And so you can remember, as a child, you went out.
I did, very much encouraged by my mother. And I remember she used to always take me out to sort of see things like the first signs of spring. We used to go and see if we could spot whether the lambs were out in the fields yet, or the flowers were out, or go and find frog spawn in the ponds and the ditches. So she was definitely the one who always encouraged that. And yeah, I took to it from there.
Really. And was that in this area? I mean, this is the area that you were born in.
Yes, so. Born in St Albans. So this was around sort of, I think the Lambs was Nash's Farm Lane and around Sandridge and the lanes around there. Yes, born and maybe bred in St Albans.
Okay. And then you went away to school and then to university. And you didn't, what did you study at university?
I studied history, which, yeah, it was a three-year course. But then at the end of that, I sort of had enough of history, and that had naturally led me into being more interested in ideas, philosophy. And I think through various people's suggestions, I ended up becoming an RE teacher in a school in Brentwood in Essex.
Was that a tough experience?
It wasn't too bad. It was a private school, Brentwood School, and I had a brilliant head of department, and we developed lots of schemes of work, and I taught philosophy, taught RE. But again, at the end of 3 years, I had sort of had enough of teaching and wanted to try something else. And my wife and I decided that we would join a mission organisation. And we went abroad to South Africa to work with that organisation for a while.
And what was the role, what was the function of this organisation? You said it was a mission organisation. What was it actually doing?
Yeah, this particular branch of the organisation was called Mercy Ship. They had a number of ships that were floating hospitals. We went on one of those, South Africa, for six months. Their role was mainly to spend time in West Africa carrying out life-changing operations for people who probably wouldn't have otherwise have got that kind of medical treatment. So removing very large tumours and carrying out operations that help people re-enter their society, really. And big tumours would often result in the people being ostracised and demonised as well. So they were, yeah, it was a very amazing work that they were doing. When we were on it, it was actually in South Africa on a more of a public relations tour and having the ship fixed up and sorted out.
Because you're not medical yourself, that wasn't...
No, we weren't medical. A lot of the people, though, that do go there are medical. We ourselves were doing a course, a sort of Bible-based course, on the ship. Wherever it was, it moved around a bit. And then we had a sort of 2 or 3 month outreach, working with a local church in Cape Town, working with some of the people who actually lived on the street and working with the projects that the church already had up and running there.
Presumably, if you were in Cape Town, you were also able to continue your interest in nature and wildlife.
Yes, I was. And I mean, one of the most incredible things about being in Africa is the sheer quantity of birds. If you walk out into any wild space that you will see, certainly that was my experience, and just the colour and variety. I mean, we have a term in the bird watching community here called little brown jobs, which are birds that just are like dunnocks and sparrows and robins, which all appear to look the same. But out there, it was every bird seemed to be absolutely vibrant colours and very beautiful, and a lot of them as well. You know, and I made a big list, I seem to remember, when I was out there.
And you were only able to go to South Africa at this point, didn't you?
This was South Africa. This was, yes, East London, Port Elizabeth, and Cape Town, finally.
Yes, and you went ashore in Cape Town. Did you, as part of your job, that was...
Yes, we worked in the centre of Cape Town. Our ship itself had a prime location because it was actually the Millennium. We were in the waterfront, so we were in a beautiful setting next to some extraordinary luxury liners and things that had paid a fortune to be there, but we were sort of welcomed as a helpful charity Yeah, we had a lovely time. But we actually led, my wife and I led a team that lived in a house in sort of one of the rougher areas of Cape Town, quite a few street people just living along the road.
Because it's a complete contrast, isn't it? It's a city like Cape Town, enormous wealth and success.
Yes.
Alongside enormous poverty.
Yes, and not only that, but a huge consciousness of its history being, and when we were there, it was still a very raw experience. You could tell the places that had been levelled in the past, and huge numbers of people had just been moved out, the will of the white man, and still very current tensions when we were there as well, the transition from apartheid.
And you feel you're going to go back there one day?
I'd love to go back, but there's no plans at the moment. It was an extraordinarily beautiful country, and we made some very good friends over there, yeah.
Okay, so apart from the nature, we'll come back to that in a moment. What are you doing now? What do you fill your hours with?
Well, a number of things. I have had my own building company. I still do some building work, and I'm trying to do a little bit more writing, hence my article in the Hearts Advertiser. I also help my wife with her business. She has a company called Artshed, which runs classes and parties for children, art-based activities. And as the business has grown, so she's required someone to help her more with the admin tasks and keeping on top of things like that. So I let her do the creative upfront bit.
So you squeeze every month, you squeeze a little bit of time to write a column for the Hearts Advertiser. I call it a column, it's a half page.
Yes. I mean, I will always try and go out during the week for a walk, and even more so as we plan to get a dog, but always have loved being outside, come wind, come rain. And so I will be out bird watching. The articles often will come very naturally from that experience of observing outside and what I see and what I hear.
And you live on the south side of St Albans,
right? Yes. That way, huh? Yes.
And so where do you go to? Where do you find wildlife?
Well, my favourite spot is the gravel pit complex past London Coney, which are the Tittenhanger gravel pits, mainly because they have the best chance of seeing the greatest variety of species because of the water and the woodland and the grassland all being there. I have other favourite places like Hartwood Forest, the newly planted woodland, which is excellent. And otherwise, I can walk down to a very good little reserve called the Watercress Wildlife Association off London Road. And so I have quite a few places I can go.
And so what you're finding here is that you said a whole variety of wildlife.
Yes.
Birds, obviously. Yeah. Water-based creatures, obviously.
Yes.
Do you come across bigger creatures that are land-based?
Well, we have plenty of foxes in the garden to try and attack my chickens and ducks. Otherwise, I think the biggest is probably the muntjac deer, which I see very regularly, but nothing much bigger than that.
You talked about Hartwood Forest, and it's somewhere that I drive past quite often. Yes. I've watched the development over the last, I don't know, it's five or 10 years, I can't remember. And one of the things I've seen flying above there is the red kite.
Yes.
We didn't used to see those, did we?
No, and they have experienced a population explosion over the last 10 years. If you had said to me back in the 80s that we would one day see red kites flying over my garden, I wouldn't have believed you. And I was always envious of friends at school who said, oh, you know, we saw one over our garden down in Dorset or wherever they lived. And I thought that was an impossibility. But they were reintroduced, probably, I'm guessing, in the late 70s, 80s, and in the Chilterns. And suddenly they seem to have reached a critical point and have just spread everywhere, really.
Is that going to become a problem? Do you then end up having too many of a particular type?
It is possible. I'm not an expert on exactly what the problems might be, but certainly when a population of any creature gets to a certain point, it does have knock-on effects. And I think there are studies running at the moment to work out what those might be. And I think there are various worries that maybe buzzards, who are also spreading their territory, may be threatened by red kites, or it's possible vice versa.
Okay.
But not known yet.
What else is happening in the forest? Are we getting a lot of small mammals that are food for the things like
yes.
the red kites?
Yes. Well, Hartwood at the moment is perhaps as best as it may ever be, depending on how it's managed. Obviously, the intention is that it will one day be a forest, which suggests lots of big trees. But at the moment, it's a mainly grassland habitat with some wooded areas, which is perfect for little mice and voles. And as a result, attracts a lot of different birds, particularly birds of prey, along with the red kite. One of the most exciting birds you'll see there quite easily at the moment is the short-eared owl. and there's been up to five of those this winter, which you may even just see from the car park. They fly in the afternoon. They're a day flying owl, and just before dusk you're most likely to see them out hunting. But they're a big owl, amazing yellow eyes, and yeah, it's very exciting to see them there.
I'm very ignorant. Owls don't need barns to live in then.
No, not even the barn owl necessarily need barns, and there are barn owls there too. These ones will breed up north, so they come to us in the winter, and they will inhabit grassland areas, and they won't require buildings, but they like the open where their food is.
How dramatic is the effect of the climate on wildlife at the moment? Are you observing anything changing? I mean, we've just had a period of continuing period of wet, but we know we're in a process of climate change. Do you see any signs of that worry you, or that you're interested in particularly?
I think, I'm not sure, it's difficult to know because you do get mild winters. I would say as time's gone on, certainly I hear more reports of birds like the swallow overwintering, and birds like the blackcap, which would originally have just come to us in the summertime. There are more reports of them actually hanging around now, spending the winter. So I don't know whether I've seen any great changes, though, that I could say this, that's because of climate change or something. I mean, the seasons do vary hugely. And certainly this mild weather has brought birds out into song much more than perhaps we would have expected. Normally at this time of year, you'll perhaps hear some of our songbirds with what's known as a subsong, very quiet little warble from the middle of the bush, but they are actually out singing very loudly in their full song, which is...
And is that because they think it's the spring?
I think they feel maybe it is spring. Yeah. And of course, if we do then get a harsh winter, a lot of them may well be in trouble because they may find they've got ahead of themselves.
I mean, as far as you know, has the changing climate that we... I mean, if we get a mild winter as we have this year, does that affect the migration patterns, that birds come back earlier or from wherever they've been to try and protect themselves against the cold, and then they come back and it's because it's warmer? Or?
I think it could do, but there are a lot of other factors that affect migrating birds, such as the weather in other countries and on other continents where they've come from. Birds like the swallow are migrating all the way up from southern Africa, and even birds like the Arctic tern are almost making the full trip between poles. So there's a lot of variables, and there are a lot of different factors that can affect bird migration. And one of the biggest problems of recent, which has made the news, is the hunting of birds. And that can have as big an impact over some of the southern European areas as climate change can.
Because in some situations, it's a battle between man's survival and...
Or maybe even man's enjoyment of sport, you could say. But okay.
Yes. I was thinking of parts of Africa where any bird could be. But presumably they're flying quite high when they're going over the Africa.
Yes, it depends. Yeah, some birds are more vulnerable than others, certainly. Mm. And of course, they're most vulnerable if they have just crossed the Sahara or an area of water where they do need to stop and feed. And that is when perhaps they're most vulnerable.
Looking back, you've been doing this piece in the Hearts Advertiser now for about a year, I think.
Yeah.
What were the highlights to you, do you think, of something you discovered when you went out that you weren't expecting to see? Because you go out not knowing, you don't know what you're going to write about until something's happened. I mean, you're not planning.
No, that's
ahead.
Right, no. Ah, well.
did you find a kingfisher anywhere? Or?
Yes, plenty of kingfishers. I mean, one of the best places for those is the watercress beds, the little nature reserve on the Ver. Lots of things. I mean, the short-eared owls were one of them. I love every summer pulling crayfish out of the River Ver as well, and with my son. Always enjoy finding those. They seem to be doing incredibly well, much the concern of some people because they're an invasive species. But a lot of the time, my enjoyment is coming from seeing familiar birds in their seasons and just enjoying them coming back in the spring and hearing them, you know, come into song and seeing their plumage come back. So it's not always sort of starbirds that I see. It's just that experience of being outside. Yes.
Do you think are birds predominant in your thinking, in your experience?
Birds are, definitely. I mean, I am interested in... it's probably my area of expertise. I'd be a bit lost if I was asked about moths and some plants, certainly. But I think my interest has naturally developed into being interested in birds. And I think probably around the age of 12, 13, that I realised I could actually distinguish different birds by listening to them. And that was quite a sort of awakening in my hobby, so to speak, because I suddenly realised, actually, if I use my ears, then I could actually find out before I saw the bird what was there.
It is the sound that's important, and it's so difficult for most of us to recognise.
Yes.
I can't store the information. I can a blackbird, blackbird, no problem.
Yes.
That's about my limit.
I think it takes time, and I think obviously some birds have a huge variety of sounds they make. But the more time you spend outside listening to birds, the more familiar you like someone with their dog gets to know their dog. You get to know how different species behave and when they make certain noises. One of the well-known ones is when you hear pied wagtails flying up and making their alarm calls, you can be 99% sure that you will also see a sparrowhawk, because they're a very reliable indicator of a sparrowhawk hunting. So you get to know what bird sounds mean, you know, their alarm calls and their songs and calls that they make.
Well, we're looking forward very much to you coming in to record your column for us each month, and we know that we will also learn a lot more during the year.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Rupert.
That's all right. Pleasure.